All right, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Erin, and we're the Cage Queens.
Knock, knock.
And I can already hear Pumpkin scratching at the door again. That did not last long. So we are back recording in person, but again, we haven't really figured out the face-to-face setup, so we are in two different levels, and Pumpkin can't decide which one she wants to be on, so no. She's...
Nothing's good enough
to pester us. Yeah, for real.
Oh, God. I love her, though. I don't even care.
So, I really hope we don't get interrupted anytime during our podcast or just our hangout session today. Because, so, I have a, I guess he's autistic neighbor. And he's an older gentleman, and I met him, like, when I first moved in, and he just kept talking about how, like, he wants to hang out a lot. Like, he's like, oh, yeah. I'll help you with your garden. Oh, I'll chop firewood for your fireplace. Uh-huh. Oh, let's go down the road and have a meal together. And I'm just like, no. but yesterday he stopped by at my front door and he knocked, and at first I was just sitting on my couch and I was just like, maybe if I just don't, like, if he can't see me, maybe he'll just go away.
I've done that.
And so I waited like a minute and he was still standing there, like, oh no, fuck. And Pumpkin was on me, and so I was like, oh, I guess I'll get up. And so then I get up, and then, you know, he starts telling me how on Sunday, which is today, he's going to start chopping the firewood. Uh-oh. and how I should come over and get some firewood. Uh-oh. And then he, like, goes off on this just 10-minute tangent about, like, literally nothing. And I'm just like, okay. See ya. Okay, thanks for stopping by. Okay, talk to you later. Like, I kept trying to end the conversation, but he was just very adamant that, you know, I get the firewood, but I'm not going to show up. Like, yeah. I'm not going to get the firewood, and I already know he's going to, like, come back and say, hey, why didn't you get the firewood? And so I'm just dreading that, but I'm hoping that it doesn't happen today.
Hopefully.
Or that he'll see there's another car in my driveway and he won't come over, but I don't know if that's gonna deter him or not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that is a possibility for today, and let's just, fingers crossed, it doesn't happen. Because I was also wearing the same sweatshirt yesterday, and he commented, he's like, I like the frog on your sweatshirt. I was like, thanks. So he can't come over today either for that reason.
Well, lucky me, because I have a beautiful view of your front. So, if he's coming, I'll know.
Oh, good. We know to duck and hide. Oh, goddamn. Yeah, so, hating having neighbors, but, I mean, obviously, yeah. They're all good intentions, and they're trying to be nice, but I'm just such a hermit that I don't want to talk to anybody, so it's hard for me.
Yeah, I totally get it, though. Yeah, I hated having neighbors. It was the worst. Like, right now, it's my only neighbor is my grandma, and that's challenges. Because
yeah,
she talks to my mom like every day on the phone because my mom checks in, you know, and then comes up once a week to do grocery shopping for my grandma and like other shit. And then my uncle and my aunt, they live in the area, so they're around a lot too, but. Apparently, my grandma, like, not necessarily keeps tabs on me, but loves to update my mom on, like, everything I'm doing. Like,
oh, good.
Yeah, I know, exactly. She'll tell my mom, like, oh, yeah, you know, Erin got home at 7 p.m., and then she went up and she took a shower, and then, you know, she did this and then that, and her cat did this and that, and I'm just like, ugh.
Oh,
God. I hate it. I hate that I'm like being documented.
Yes. And your mom's probably like, cool.
Yeah. Like, my mom's like, it's good for your grandma because it gives her something to do that's not just watching TV, which is true. Ugh. Very true. It's so weird to me because then I feel like I can't do anything without somebody exactly. saying something.
Yes. I don't love that for you, but hopefully, you know, in the next month, you'll be in your own place.
God, I better be. I can't really do another.
Can't keep this up.
Yeah, I can't do more than what I have scheduled.
Knock, knock.
So I'm looking in my room and Pumpkin's in here. So she must do that. She must open the door. And now she's coming back down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, here she is in the kitchen.
Okay, well, she's figured it out. Yep. She figured out the best of both worlds. Oh, my God.
I love this cat. Come here, Pip.
What a drama queen. But so the movie we got to watch this week, the long-anticipated movie. Do you want to tell the people what we watched?
Oh my God. So we rewatched Mandy. Came out in 2018. It's definitely, you know, your thriller, your fantasy, your horror, and some action. And basically what happens is Nick's girlfriend is abducted and then later killed by a cult. And Nick seeks his revenge. It's a trip. Like, the movie from start to finish is definitely, like, it makes you feel, if you're not doing drugs, it makes you feel like you are. I definitely, because we rewatched this movie coincidentally on the same night, because we texted each other and we were within 15 minutes of each other pretty much. But I definitely got stoned when I watched it. And I told you you should do the same, but you were already too far for that.
Also, I could barely keep up what was happening with this movie sober. Like, there was so much going on and so many, like, things that I'm, like, questioning on, like, wait, did I miss something? Or is this just an unexplained, like, plot? Like, what is going on? So I feel like this was probably a movie I should have rewatched a couple times, because honestly, rewatching this versus when we watched it, you know, the very first time, however many years ago, I don't really remember much of what happened. It was all kind of like, I remember the general plot, but I didn't remember like the details. And it was kind of like rewatching it, you know, watching it for the first time. And I was like, Jesus, there's a lot that happens. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting. And there's a lot of different like cadences throughout. Like, I felt like in the beginning, it was really off to a slow start, but soon as Nick gets his revenge, it was like powering through. So it was a ride for sure.
Yeah, and when Nick finally gets his revenge, it's like already an hour into the movie. So like that mm-hmm. first hour drags pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they're just really trying to set a scene, I guess, or set the feeling for making you side with Nick in the end, but it's a long one, and we're probably gonna not give it, you know, all the time that you would think we would, because this movie was definitely not quite what I remembered, because I guess I didn't mm-hmm. really remember it. I just remembered it being like crazy. Like, I just remember coming out of it going like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Still felt that. Different. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess we can kind of get into it. So the scene is set in a very Joe-esque type of setting where we see Nick's character, whose name is Red Miller, cutting down some trees, mm-hmm. and he is in his lumberjack era. And he's cutting down trees, and then he takes a chopper out of the area where they're cutting down trees and goes home to his girlfriend. And we get kind of this
type of like title screen that shows they're in the Shadow Mountains, and it's based in 1983. And so he and his girlfriend live in this very remote area in the middle of nowhere. And we see that his girlfriend, Mandy, is the very, like, artsy type. And, like, we just see her smoking a bowl and, like, doing some painting and reading and just really, you know, getting into her inner creative side.
Yeah. Nick comes home and he's just like, wow, that's great. That looks so good. He's really into what she does.
Yeah, he's a very supportive partner, and you can tell he's very infatuated with her. And, you know, there's some pillow talking about, like, oh, what's your favorite planet, that kind of stuff. And so they kind of keep up this, like, interstellar, like, I don't know, mystical part of their relationship. Yeah. And, like, it has so much, like, background, like, synth music, like, just to give you that, like, again, that, like, 80s type of psychedelic vibe.
Yeah, and the movie does a lot with, like, the lighting. So in a lot of scenes where, like, bad shit's happening, the lighting is red. And in, like, this comfort scene with Nick and Mandy kind of talking to each other in bed, the lighting is blue and it's, like, softer. And then there's also sometimes kind of, like, an intermix of, like really artsy shit happening. Like, when they're talking about space, we see, like, the sky looks very, like, beautiful and elegant. Not real, but what you would see in, like a galaxy painting, basically. But it gets just so weird and kind of hard to explain at points. Like, there's one point where Mandy wakes up early in the morning after they have this long conversation about the planets, and she follows, like, an animal noise through the woods and finds a dead baby deer in the woods. But then it cuts to, you know, like, we don't know if that actually happened or if that was a dream, because the next thing we know, we're seeing the static on the TV, and Mandy wakes Nick up and tells him that he's having a bad dream and asks him what it was about, and he's like, I don't remember having a bad dream, and I don't remember. But that just prompts Mandy to tell him, like, a story about how when she was a kid, her dad made all the kids, like, kill baby starlings with a crowbar. And that's just, like, a trauma to her, I guess. But it's also, like, what does this have to do with the movie? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know.
Yeah. I don't understand it either. And I was just like, again, it was like in the beginning, it was like they're trying to fill space before, like, I don't know what it was trying to establish, but I was just like, all right, let's keep going.
Don't be negative.
The whole time that we see Mandy in this movie, she's reading this book that's like a sci-fi book called The Seeker of the Serpent's Eye, and she gets very into it, and she carries it with her all the time and is always reading it. And, like, I think she kind of starts to mix her world with that fantasy world a little bit. But there's a scene where she's walking down, like, a two-track woodsy road, and a van passes her. There's a group of adults in the van. There's, like, six of them. And as they're passing Mandy, there's one guy in this van who, like, cannot take his eyes off of her. And they even, like, make eye contact, or maybe he thinks they make eye contact along the way. And we later find out that that is a cult. And the guy that was staring at her is kind of, like, the leader of the cult.
Yes.
Yeah, that's when we go into the next part, you know, because we had the Shadow Mountains title basically pop up. And now we have Children of the New Dawn, which is actually a pretty cool cult name, if I have to say so myself.
Yes, it was definitely giving cult. And so, yeah, they're kind of in this house/motel-looking room, and Jeremiah, who is the cult leader, is just kind of, like, laying on a bed, like, moping. And this older lady, whose name is Mother Marlene, is just pretty much, like, trying to make him feel better, but he's just, like, being a dick towards Marlene. And he's like, no, I need her. And by her, he was referring to Mandy. And then he kind of summons in another member of the cult whose name is Brother Swan. And he's like, can you go get that girl we saw? And Brother Swan's like, you betcha. and then Jeremiah summons in another cult member who is kind of like, her name is Sister Lucy. And she's like the most innocent member of the cult who's like clearly been manipulated and is just like, just very, you know, kind of in a trapped situation. And she's kind of like his forced lover. Yeah. I mean, they're all kind of his lovers, but like she's the main one.
Right. She's the young, attractive girl, basically, in the group. So, of course, she's going to be like the primary one he wants to fuck. We can assume.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But she's kind of, she's definitely the least evil out of all of them.
Yeah.
And so there is this general store that Mandy works at, and Marlene goes there and pretty much, you know, gets Mandy to like tell her approximately where they live, which is near Crystal Lake. And apparently Crystal Lake is also the lake where Friday the 13th was filmed, and Jason killed all of his victims. So okay. I was like, interesting little snippet there to connect kind of the darkness of this film. But yeah, so they pretty much find out where Mandy lives, and then they begin plotting.
Yeah, and Brother Swan, he takes the guys out to a field, and part of this, like, getting Mandy deal is that he has this, like, horn that he needs to use to summon these, like, almost demonic guys who are going to help him get Mandy. And, like, this scene, like, the whole scene from start to finish was so... This is when, like, things start to get weird, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. This is when things really change, because he blows this horn, which sounds super creepy. Nothing happens right away, and he gets back in the car, and they kind of wait. And then these three dudes come, like, rolling in on quads or motorcycles or whatever, and they're just, like, revving it, and they're, like, all spiky and, like, mutant-y.
They look like looking. The members of Slipknot.
Yeah, pretty much. But, like, they get out to meet these guys, and they give them, like, a jar of gray goo as, like, an offering, and they, like, one of the dudes just, like, chugs it, and he's like, you know, we want more, blood for blood, what are you gonna give us? And then Swan's like, first, you know, we have a request from you, so you have to, like, do this thing first. So, then we, are back with Nick and Mandy. And they're having just, like, a chill night at home, having their TV dinners. They have, like, a normal night in bed, and they are awoken. And it's, like, seizure-level lighting in this scene, where, like, it's the blue light, but it's, like, flickering a lot. And the biker guys and the cult guys kind of come together to basically kidnap Mandy in front of Nick. And they knock him out, and that's the last we see of Nick for a while, because the rest of the time we're following Mandy and what happens to her.
Yeah, and so one of the areas where I started getting confused was with this little, like, ATV biker gang. Because I'm so confused on whether, like, they're actually humans or if they're demons. Because the whole, like, concept of, like, using a horn to summon them, that they, like, are in these, like, bizarre looking outfits, they have some sort of, like, I don't know, like, unnatural, like, power in essence.
Yeah,
but then later we spoilers kind of find out that there is this big kind of drug ring happening, and that these demon like creatures are, like, presumed to be a part of that, and they're just part of an experiment where the, like, drug was tainted or whatever, and then they just became addicted and became, like, supernaturally fucked up because of the drugs. And so, yeah, that was something I just had to, like, keep Googling to try to get clarity on. I'm like, are these things real, or are they, like, just you know, freaks of nature. I don't know.
I don't know either. So, it's hard to say. Like, I think that's one of those things where it's just like a more of the fantasy element of the whole thing, mm-hmm. where you're not going to ever know if they were like people or otherworldly creatures, or if they right. were once people and became otherworldly creatures.
Yeah. So yeah, that was definitely an element that kind of kept you questioning. Next thing we know, Mandy is kind of at the cult residence, and Marlene's talking to her, and she's just like, just do what you're told, and everything will be fine. And then she puts a droplet in Mandy's eye, which is LSD, and then she also gets this big, fat, juicy, like, bee-like creature, and then gets it to sting her neck. Yeah, I was like, there's no... This fake, right? I was like, but maybe Aaron knows if it's a real bug.
I mean, okay, so, well, yeah. I knew we were going to lean on me, the entomologist, to answer this question. So, I tried to Google it to see if there was any, like, internet answers that would give me an idea. Because the only thing that they were really saying on the internet was it was a tarantula hawk wasp, which I have seen before, and they only get up to like 2 inches. And this thing that they were putting into her neck was like at least 3 to 4 inches in size.
It was juicy.
It was huge. And so, like, I believe if it's not some sort of other exotic, that it's just like an over-exaggerated tarantula hawk mm-hmm. wasp. So, you know, not actually
maybe
that
thing
big.
was doing LSD, and that thing also became mutated.
Yeah, like, I don't know what they were, like, holding it in, because it was, like, in kind yeah. of a liquid, which would have, I mean, any other insect would have killed the insect, because it, like, yeah. suffocates them. But, like, yeah, there's definitely some things that didn't make a ton of sense about that. The sting is notoriously really painful, but because it's a paralyzing sting that they have. So I don't know what that coupled with LSD would actually do to a person, but it was the cherry on top, so yep. must have been worth it. But yeah, she trips balls after that. Just it's hard. It's hard to watch because of the like the way that the I don't know image kind of just like it's dragging. The movement is dragging, so it makes you feel like mm-hmm. you're like just as whacked out as she is. But they take her into, like, this common room where the rest of the cult members are also all, like, pretty zonked. And there's Jeremiah.
That's so funny because that's the actual word I used in my notes. Oh, God. No other way to describe it.
I'm sure there are so many, but the fact that we came up with the same word was pretty impressive.
Oh, God.
But yeah, so Jeremiah kind of tries to get her to make the correlation that he's like a Jesus-like figure or a prophet of sorts, because he has the long hair and he's wearing a robe, and she's not letting him bait her, basically. Like, she's not falling for his bullshit, and she's not easily manipulated in the way that he wants her to be. So he puts his record on, which plays a song that he wrote and sang about himself, and it's just, you know, like a kind of like that peace, love, and whatever kind of style of music, but it starts out with like, every man must take a wife. And he's just, like, really getting down on it. And then he goes into a really long monologue about his walk with Christ, basically, and his mission, and how he is benefited by his beliefs. And it's basically, like, just his face talking to you, and he's not blinking, and it's so long. And then by the end of it, he stands up again and opens his robe, and he is fully nude underneath, and we see his dick, like, right there for the world to
yeah.
see.
And apparently, in the in the trivia, it said that during that scene they wanted him to be jacking off, but yeah. The actor was like, nope, that's where I draw the line. I was like, okay. I mean, the full dick was effective, and anytime we get to see full dick, it is always a statement.
That's true.
The funny thing, too, is, like, originally when the director was casting for this, they wanted Nick to be the cult leader.
Yeah.
And could you imagine that scene? If Nick was in it, we would have seen full dick.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of doubt he would have done that.
He
but
probably wouldn't but that would have been wild.
That would have been crazy.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see Nick as the cult leader, but I also loved him as in this role. I wish he could have played both.
I know. That would have been a fun two Nick experiment.
But definitely.
But yeah, when Jeremiah is fully like out in front of Mandy, she still is not like interested in anything he's offering, and then she's like, so wait, you wrote and sang this song and it's about you? And she's like just kind of getting it, and then she kind of starts laughing at him, and he gets a little bit pissed off, which makes her laugh even harder in a more mocking way, and he's like telling all of his cult members to like not look at him while he's getting ridiculed, and that kind of seals Mandy's fate after that. So they take her back to her house where Nick is tied up with barbed wire, and he's got barbed wire around his like face and mouth, and Jeremiah asks himself in the mirror, or tells himself to tell himself what to do. Obviously, like, everybody's hallucinating, except for Nick. And they end up taking Mandy, putting her inside of, like, a canvas bag, and tying her up by her feet, and lighting her on fire in front of Nick, and Nick has to watch the whole thing. They also stab him with, like, this knife that, I can't remember what they called it, but it was some, like, nerdy, it's the tainted blade of the pale knight straight from the abyssal lair.
Which apparently was some, like, D&D reference.
Yeah.
So yeah, they stab him, and then they obviously kill his girlfriend, and then they just head out.
Yep.
It's crazy evil.
So Nick is tied up, and eventually he ends up getting out because it's kind of like barbed wire he's tied up in. He, ends up getting out, and he crawls to his beloved's remains, and her skull just kind of like blows away in the wind. And obviously he's pretty distraught, and so he walks inside, find out he doesn't have pants on. And there is a show on the TV about me, the Cheddar Goblin. I was like, I've never related more to a character in my life. I loved that little, like, it was the little detail of adding that commercial. It just felt so, like, I don't know, just felt very 80s to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it was great. And then Nick kind of like passes out on the couch. And this is where we start to see like animated versions of Mandy and like Nick's dreams. And in this, she's just kind of like decaying. And then he wakes up.
He wakes up and he goes into the bathroom, which is like your classic like 70s retro vibe bathroom. And it's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's very busy. But he pulls this full bottle of vodka out of like a back stash in a drawer, and he starts chugging it, and then also like dumping it on his open wounds, and keeps chugging it. And this is also a long scene where Nick kind of, he does a lot, and it seems like it'd be very hard to film this scene multiple times, so maybe they got it right in one. But he's chugging it, dumping it on himself, and then he starts screaming, and he has to sit down on the toilet because he's, like, really losing it. And he's screaming and crying, and it eventually kind of turns into, like, a rage scream cry. And then we know that Nick is on a mission after that. He goes to this man who lives in a trailer, kind of in a quiet area, on his own, and he's reluctant to let anybody in. But when he sees that it's Nick, he's like, oh, you know, it's you. And I'm like, what is Nick's backstory here? Like, I want to know what kind of shit Nick was doing, because Nick comes to this trailer to retrieve his Reaper, which is his crossbow, and the man gives him some extra arrows to go hunting, in quotation, you know, hunting, under the condition that he puts them to good use. And so, because of that, Nick has to tell him his story. And he describes what happens, or what had happened to Mandy, and the man who, I don't think they ever say his name in the movie. It was in, like, IMDb and the credits that I got it. But his name's Carruthers, which is, like, an old crusty man name. But Carruthers, he knows about these demonic type of people that Nick has seen. They're called the Black Skulls. And Carruthers just happens to know where they, like, live, basically. He knows kind of roughly where they're located, so he gives that information to Nick because he's, like, fully on Nick's side. He's like, yeah, go get these fuckers. But yeah, so Nick is on a mission now, and the next thing he does is he becomes a blacksmith and makes this fancy-ass, like, axe-looking thing.
Yeah, and he's in aviators, not safety glasses, while he's making it, so it's extra fucking cool. And so we know that Nick is switching into revenge slash action mode.
Yep.
And so he drives out to the spot where he knows the Black Skulls hang out, and he kind of hides off into the shadows with his crossbow, and then he kind of starts picking them off. And so one of them drives by, he shoots him with a crossbow, gets him. I think it was the same one.
Yeah, so he shot one from, like, a high ridge, and then he, like, quickly drove down to the road that he shot the guy on and hit him with his car to, like, you know, definitely get him. So, yeah. And when he did that, he, like, passed out in his car and had another cartoon dream about Mandy. But, yeah, when he wakes up, he's in the basement of another play of another house that has, like, a pit down in it, and he's got one arm cuffed to a pipe and the other hand is, like, nailed to the floor, so he can't really go anywhere.
Yeah, and then one of these Black Skulls walks into the room and approaches Nick, and he talks to him, and he's just like, man, you really have a death wish. And then Nick, like, manages to break free from the radiator by, like, loosening up a piece, and then he, like, bashes the creature, and then there's this big hole in the room, and he knocks the creature into the hole, and then he pulls out the nail from, you know, his hand nailed to the floor, and he finds a box cutter, and he goes upstairs, and there's some dead folks on the bed, and then there's this other creature with, like, crab-like claws that's just sitting on the couch doing drugs and watching porn.
Yeah.
Which kind of, again, makes us think that maybe lean more towards these are human types of people.
But because this dude who's sitting there watching porn, he's doing coke, he has a knife dick. Like, he has this long, curved, like, sharp knife dick. And, like, I had to really, like, I had to turn the lights off to watch this because it's so dark. It's so hard to tell what happens. But, like, Nick comes up behind him and tries to, like, attack him. But the guy's too quick. He intercepts Nick's, like, blow, throws him down on the table on top of the pile of coke, breaks the table. Nick backs up into, like, the TV, and, like, I don't know if the dude tripped or if Nick, like, tripped him, but the guy falls towards Nick, gets his knife dick stuck in the floor, and while he's, like, kind of on top of Nick, and Nick's, like, stabbing him with his box cutter, the dude is, like, also, like, getting off because his knife dick is, like, in the floor, and he kind of, like, comes as Nick, like, kills him, and, Yeah, it was quite an intense scene. And if you weren't paying close attention, you're not going to know what fucking happened. But I'm telling you.
It was weird. When he died/came, he, like, a bunch of blood came out of his mouth and he spewed all over Nick's face.
Yeah.
And Nick doesn't bother to wipe it off.
No.
And then the other creature that kind of fell in the hole, he shows up and then Nick pretty much just rips his face off. And so that one's done.
Yep.
And then he gathers his axe, and bow, and then he heads out. But at the same time, he finds that jar of sludge, yes, that the creatures were, you know, that the cult gave the creatures, and he just has a little taste of it, and it pretty much sends Nick into a whole nother dimension.
Yeah, Nick starts tripping wild, crazy balls now.
I'm going hunting.
And then he goes for another one. I don't know how many of these black skulls there are, but, like, he's already gotten three of them. And mm-hmm. the next one he finds is standing, like, by a burning car. And he shoots him in the neck with his crossbow. And the dude, like, doesn't flinch. And he pulls the rest of that arrow through his neck. So Nick goes down there with his axe and goes after the guy. And ends up, like, pushing him backwards into the fire, and the dude tells Nick that she's still burning, like, Mandy's still burning, which really gets Nick. So he throws the dude down to the ground while he's, like, on fire and cuts the guy's head off with his cool axe thing. And then Nick spots, like, this partially smoked cigarette on the ground, and he picks it up and uses the dude's flaming head to light the cigarette. So, Nick's on his shit.
Yeah. He is on a whole another level of badassery.
Mm-hmm.
And so he takes the, like, ATV and heads out to some sort of facility, which is where we meet the chemist. And he is the one that pretty much has been cooking up all this crazy drugs. And he has a tiger in the cage named Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he lets the tiger out of the cage. And then pretty much Nick really doesn't say anything during this scene. The chemist just kind of goes off talking. But eventually he kind of, like, knows why Nick is there, and he leads them to where the cult hangs out.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
he knows that Nick's been robbed, and he's like, go get your justice, man.
Yeah, like, somehow he can, like, read Nick's mind or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But Nick kind of goes off, and he has another dream, like the cartoon dream. And this one, Mandy is removing this, like, green glowing rock from a large dead tiger creature. And then next thing we know, Nick wakes up in the woods and he's near some running water and he can hear a chainsaw in the distance. So I don't know how the fuck he ended up there, but he, like, just happens to be in the right area. And from this ridge up high, he can see this, like, wooden structure being built. It's like kind of like a sanctuary almost down in the valley, and he sees the cult's van down there, and the van is leaving the valley, and Nick strategically had placed some, like, things that kind of look like those jacks, those metal jacks that people used to play with, like, many, many years ago, and they, like, puncture the van's tires because, of course, they were placed so perfectly that they ran over it in the right exact spot, and the tires pop, the van stops, and Swan's like, yeah, great, fucking course this happens, and he gets out of the car and immediately is attacked by Nick, and Nick, like, gets him up against a tree. And Swan's saying some bullshit about Mandy. And Nick uses the non-axe end of his giant axe, which is more like a spear at the bottom. And he stabs it through Swan's mouth and head. And the other person that's in the car is Lucy. And he kind of looks at her and walks away. He doesn't kill Lucy. It's kind of like the one that gets away.
Mm-hmm. Next scene is where we see Brother Hanker, which you've seen Children of the Corn, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know who Isaac is? That like redhead that like is like Malachi's like right hand. This guy reminded me so much of that guy that I just referred to him as. His name is Malachi or is Alex, like, or Isaac? I can't remember.
Okay.
But the redhead from Children of the Corn. You all know him.
Yeah.
That's who he looked like. And he was cleaning his car. And then Nick just throws an axe in his head.
Yeah, that was the quickest one.
Got him right in the dome. So, yeah, he gets him. And then next, Nick picks up a chainsaw, and then there is another cult member who is, again, kind of just this background character. He has, like, a mullet, and Nick picks up a chainsaw, and this mullet guy picks up an excessively bigger chainsaw. Like, the thing's, like, 5 feet long. It's huge.
Yeah.
And they pretty much, like, duke it out. And Nick ends up, like, losing his saw, and he's kind of, like, in a position where, you know, we're made to believe that he might get, he might get got, but then there is this metal chain that is right next to him, and so he lassos it around the dude's neck and then pulls him towards the chainsaw, which is on the ground and still going, and he pretty much like pulls him into the to the saw to get him killed.
Yep.
But the amount of strength Nick has to, you know, be throwing axes in people's head, lassoing people with chains, like, we're made to, at first I was like, oh, it must be the drugs that's giving him this, like, superhuman strength, but I'm like, he's slipping off at this point, like, dude's just strong.
Yeah, I mean, like, that chain that he swings over his head, I can't even imagine how much that weighs and the amount of strength you need to get that kind of momentum going to, like, lasso somebody with it. Pretty impressive, Nick, but I doubt that's obviously, like, none of his real strength. But
that's that delivery driver strength that we were talking about before the podcast. We're talking about how strong delivery drivers are.
Because they have the tendency to just one arm carry like 200-pound boxes.
Yes. So, yeah, we've got to pick up their workout routine. But anyways.
Yeah. So, after that dude's dead, Nick ends up back at the chapel or whatever that they're building. And he goes up to the pulpit, which is actually, it's like a giant tree trunk kind of like podium that they created, which I thought was actually really cool. If I were going to go to any sort of church, that would be the coolest one to go to.
For sure.
But he goes down into this like hole in the floor that leads down into like a series of like tunnely rooms. And the first one he ends up in has Marlene in it. And she's like sobbing for some reason, but she stops and tells Nick that Jeremiah says she's like the most sensual lover, and kind of is like coming on to Nick about how, you know, and trying to convince him that she's like totally worth his time. And
she's like really hyping up her sex game.
We don't see what happens to her right away, but pretty quick we do know what happens to her, because Nick finds Jeremiah and rolls Marlene's head to him, and that freaks him out a little bit. But Jeremiah is like nude again, or if he's wearing like underwear, like that's about it, and he's just in a room by himself kind of talking to himself. And Nick like and Jeremiah have like a short back and forth, and Jeremiah is like kneeling before Nick, and Nick has Jeremiah's head between his hands, and he like begs Nick not to hurt him, then offers to suck his dick, and Nick says something like, "I am your god now," and like crushes Jeremiah's skull in his hands.
Again, so strong. Yeah. Oh my God. And so then, you know, again, on his badass high horse, Nick lights the place on fire.
Yep.
And cool guy slow-mo turns around and walks out without looking back.
Yep.
And then he, like, gets in a car and starts driving away. And he's seen, like, visions of Mandy. And pretty much he sees her in the passenger seat smiling at him, and then the camera pans to him smiling back, and it's fucking hilarious because he's just covered in blood. He's in his like battle armor. He looks fucking insane because his eyes are wide open. His mouth, he's just in full grin mode, and he just looks batshit crazy. But it was pretty funny.
Yeah, and as he drives away into the night, it kind of, the like camera pans out and it's like all space sci-fi. Definitely not, you know, real shit that we see, because there's like two planets or moons or something in the sky, and the lighting, like the colors are just very ethereal and otherworldly. But that's that's the end. Like, we did it. We watched Mandy again.
So I'm dying to know what your thoughts are on it, because obviously we came in with such high expectations. Did it meet expectations?
Oh no, of course it didn't meet my expectations. Like, it was it was a cool movie, like for the effects and stuff, but it wasn't I wasn't sure what I would remember watching it, and I remembered next to none of it. So like, I still liked it as a Nick project. But is it one of my favorites? Probably not.
Interesting. Okay. I definitely agree, because, I mean, it's by far the best movie we've watched in a long time.
That's true.
Based on his track record of just, you know, not having the greatest films in the 2010s. But, I mean, it was definitely, like, psychedelic. Yeah. It was definitely had all of the elements of a movie we typically like, which is, like, cults, demons, drugs, true, like horror, like a lot of the, you know, ingredients for a recipe of a movie we liked. I think one of the things, my harshest criticism would just be the pace of the movie. Because it just there was just too much, and it didn't need to be that way.
I say if they were to, that first hour, if they could have like condensed that into maybe 20 minutes to 30 minutes, you know, of kind of that lead up, and then the rest of it pretty much staying the same roughly when Nick kind of takes the lead, I feel like that would be a much more digestible and interesting movie. And I think I would rank it higher.
Because as soon as, like, Nick, you know, got his battle axe and started, you know, on his Fury episode, like, that was a good pace, because he was just, like, knocking him off left and right, and, like, then, but it almost felt like, compared to the beginning of the movie, it almost felt rushed at that point, because then I'm like, oh, geez, now we're just going through this.
Right.
But, yeah, Nick, obviously, he was a star. Reading like the reviews and like the feedback, like people really did like this movie, and they liked seeing like this different side of Nick, and I he got a lot of props for it. So you know, well deserved. He brought this movie to life.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, Nick was definitely the best part of the movie and my favorite part. And it's not like I will never watch this movie again. It's just, man, 2 hours is a long time to dedicate to anything.
Yeah, even though we started, because we both started watching it on Thursday, I only got halfway through it. And I was like, all right, I need a break. So then I watched the rest of it on Friday. So yeah, if it could be a little bit more condensed, that would have been fantastic. But hey, it is what it is. So what I need to know is, did it make your top 10?
It's in my top like 20 or top 15. Maybe not my top 10.
Okay. Okay, let's look at our list and see where we put this bad boy.
Because so like Pay the Ghost and Bringing Out the Dead are the other kind of like horror movies that are in the top 10 that we have, but Birdie's number 16, which is still to me just ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm down here with Bad
Lieutenant. By Bad Lieutenant. Yeah. To be honest, I don't even remember what The Trust was.
That was the one with Elijah Wood, where Nick was a character. They were, you know, like they worked with
evidence. Oh, that's right. Yeah. He had a lot of quirks in that one. Yeah, I would say it's not better. Probably not better than Face Off.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm down here with Bad Lieutenant. Because in Bad Lieutenant, Nick also has a drug problem, and there's a lot of hallucinations. Although those hallucinations are a little different.
Right, that's the one where we see like
the lizards.
Yeah. I did like those hallucinations too because they were. They were so random, but also so, like, a nice little flair to the movie. So, did you like this one better than Bad Lieutenant?
That's where I'm... Maybe, because there's the cult side. I think
I would put it above Bad Lieutenant, below Face Off.
Yeah.
So, that would put it pretty high still at number 12 out of 85.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of my problem with, you know, not loving this movie is because I tainted my Nick experience this weekend, and I watched the new movie Dream Scenario. I did that, because it's free to watch on HBO Max right now, so I took the opportunity and I did it.
Oh my god. And so based on your response then, it kind of seems like that movie might have been pretty good.
It was pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was interesting because of the themes and things that happen in it. I'm not going to spoil it for you because I know you haven't watched it.
Nope. But I know we will watch it eventually because That is on the list. And, you know, we are getting actually pretty close because now we're in the 2018. So, like, we're really pretty far. way more than halfway. So, but yeah, still a little bit ways out because the next movie that we're watching is called Looking Glass. And the description is very short, saying a couple buy a desert motel where they find that strange, mysterious events occur.
Okay.
Period. That's it. Released in 2018, rated R, mystery/thriller.
Not sure what to, like, I'm curious about what kind of, like, mysterious events, you know, like, are they supernatural or just, like shady people doing shady shit. I don't know.
Looking at just the cover art, Nick is wearing Harry Potter glasses. It's a new look we haven't seen before. God. So yeah, I mean, hey, they. I guess we'll see soon enough.
What's that?
Check us out on Patreon and become a Nick sack for $1. You'll have access to our bonus episodes covering other Nick media. We have 5 bonus episodes out now, including Nick's Saturday Night Live appearances, The History of Swear Words, our review of The Haunting of Nicolas Cage, a novella, and Dark by Paul Schrader. We are also taking requests, so become a Nick sack for $1 and let us know what you want to hear. You can also follow us on Instagram at Cage Queens Podcast, where we have a link to our up-to-date movie ranking. Again, that's Cage Queens Podcast on Instagram and Patreon. Thanks for listening.
That was my favorite shirt.
All I know is Nick is our drug of choice and we're hooked, baby.